Friends with Brews.
Hi, Peter.
Hi, Scott. Hey, we're recording this a couple days after Christmas.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what did Vixen and Donner and Dingo
and Greg, don't forget Greg.
And Greg. Who's Greg? Greg's your running buddy.
Yes, but also it's the name of one of Santa's reindeer.
Greg is?
I will send a link in the show notes.
Did Chad GPT tell you this?
No, this was from a YouTube video. So one of my favorite YouTube channels, and this is evidenced by the fact that I subscribe to it and pay them. The guy just does like parodies of comic book and superhero themes, like talking and having normal conversations. Most of the conversations are just either the Justice League or the Avengers telling each other that their powers are stupid and why they break the laws of physics and how they should all have cancer, or, you know, like if you were to do that, you know, you would destroy the world just by standing where you are and all these different things. And it's pretty freaking hilarious. So in the most recent episode, Batman and Iron Man are together and they're talking about Christmas, and Santa Claus shows up. And so they do a breakdown of why Santa's powers are stupid and don't make any sense.
They are stupid and they don't make any sense.
They are. So we've established that you're Scott and I'm Peter.
And we've not established that we're drinking coffee, but we are drinking coffee. And you said something about you had to hurry because you're going to be drinking some caffeine. So that means to me that you're not having your Wegmans decaf or your Whole Foods decaf or your decaf Whole Foods or your decaf anything.
I am drinking a cup of Snowy Owl Coffee Roasters Mexican Oaxaca Cerro La Bruja limited release single origin light roast. I brewed it in my AeroPress, 20 grams of beans, approximately 200 grams of water. And it is indeed a lighter roast than what I'm used to. Pleased to say, it does not have an overly sour taste. As we know, that turns me right off. This is drinkable. I'm not sure how to... Definitely notes of caramel. Not sure I'm tasting chocolate. Like they said, there were hints of chocolate. I'm not picking that up though. It tastes pretty good. I'm kind of surprised. I'm not usually a light roast guy, but this is good. Let's see what the package says. First off, on the front of the package, Mexican Oaxaca Cerro La Bruja, limited release, single origin. And on the scale from light to dark, where there are five dots, this is the second dot of light over. So it's on the lighter side of things. The coffee roaster is located on 161 Route 6A, Sandwich, Massachusetts. This came from a 10-ounce bag. Ingredients: freshly roasted coffee, mindfully sourced, vertical bar, fresh roasted, vertical bar, Cape made. Mindfully source. Okay, good. And then what do they say about the thing? Process: vertical bar, washed and dried on petate mat for 6 to 10 days. Altitude: 1500 to 1700 MASL. MASL. Varieties: vertical bar, pluma. Notes: date, milk chocolate, toasted nut. Let me try that again. Maybe I'm picking up a hint of something rather date-like, something like dried fruit. So maybe that is something that I'm picking up here.
But what kind of fruit?
Yeah, like a date or a fig. It's good. I am now going to add a little bit of cream and see how that affects things. So I put in about a teaspoon or so of half and half, organic half and half. Ooh,
organic. Do you have a link for these people, for the website to this coffee?
The link to the website is in the show reminders list, since we don't have show notes document for the moment that I don't have access to. However, there is no link directly to this coffee because, drum roll please, I could not find it on their website. I found lots of other coffees on their website.
I know.
But the fact that they did not even have their website on their bag kind of forebode, I knew we were going to have problems.
Forecasted.
That's it. Yeah, sure. Let's go.
It forecratered. Hey, they've got a decaf Mayan blend too that you could try.
Hmm. Okay. I might. So as you know, I don't think that the listeners know, I did a full-on restore from my Arc backup to this laptop that we're on a while ago, because about a month ago or so, I spilled hot tea with lemon and honey onto my keyboard, and I had to leverage my AppleCare contract with and paid the $99 water damage fee. They said it was going to be $299, and when I got it back, they only charged me $99, and I got a new keyboard, a new trackpad, and a new battery out of it. But as a result, they did a full-on system restore. Why? Don't know. Maybe they just wanted to test when I said, yes, I have a backup. So I did my full restore from Arc, and then I found out which of the applications that I have installed do and do not support being restored from a backup. And apparently Shush is one of those that did not get backed up and therefore did not get restored.
I would try it with something like Carbon Copy Cloner for comparison, just to see, because...
Yeah, I'm not thrilled with Arc. I think it's fine. I don't, you know, I have a super, you know, duper problem with it. But you may recall that the reason I tried Arc was I was always getting like 20,000 backup errors whenever it would try to back up something, whenever Backblaze would try to back up something in iCloud or on OneDrive. And allegedly, Arc does a better job. Found out that it's not true. Arc allegedly, and when I say allegedly, I believe that this was something that my AI assistant likely hallucinated, said that Arc will, when it finds something in cloud that's not local, it will download a copy of the file so that it can back it up. And that never has happened that I've been able to observe. So a little disappointed.
Well, you might find that problem to be true with all of them.
Yeah.
That may be a macOS thing. They may be fighting something that you can't change. I lost you. All of a sudden, I can't hear you.
Yeah. So I installed Shush. Can you tell?
Yep.
I downloaded it from the App Store, and sure enough, there it goes. Interesting thing is it's not showing up in my menu bar, though, in my... It's like a super hidden bar. I don't see it anywhere. That is a little odd. So anyway, as I was saying, I'm sort of working with a relatively new computer here because nothing is working the way I thought it would. And yeah, there you go. All right. So that's that. Enough of that. Talk to me more about things. What's your beverage?
Talk about my coffee?
I just asked.
Jeez. Oh, you just asked. Peter, that is so timely because I was just about to tell you about my beverage. My beverage is from Water Avenue. And recently I've discovered about them that I don't really like the decaf that I was drinking from them. But I do like this one. And this is a bag that I sent you a picture of the other day. This is Water Avenue Rogue Valley Dark Roast. Our darkest roast yet. And Peter might think, oh, thank God, the beans are so oily. They're not oily. They're really not, but they are pretty dark. And thank God they're not oily, but it says our darkest blend. Why is this? This is an eye test. Their website is an eye chart. Our darkest blend with, oh my God, what is wrong with these people? Our darkest blend blooms with these classic coffee notes. And then it gets to the notes, which I can actually read. And they say bittersweet chocolate, toasted almond, and toffee. And it says, looking for a dark roast with nuanced flavor? This washed coffee from Chiapas, Mexico is roasted with a calibrated focus on time and temperature. They have calibrated time to meet their needs, Peter. That explains why it's always going by too fast for me, because it probably works for them. I don't know. Anyway, sure. Yeah. It's bold and tasty, but never burnt, and meant to be sipped from a diner mug in a vinyl booth. I don't want to sit in a vinyl booth. or a stainless mug on your morning walk. I'm just blowing it and all. I'm not in a vinyl booth. I'm not wearing vinyl outfit. I'm not in a diner. I'm not in a diner mug. I don't have a stainless steel mug.
Well, diners don't use stainless steel, so I don't think that's a, I don't think that's necessarily a problem.
No, no, no. Those were two separate things. From a diner mug in a vinyl booth or a stainless mug on your morning walk.
Okay. Got it. Yeah. On the next, a quick topic, which is a recurring topic between you and me. In fact, many days out of the week, I will start with something on this topic, which usually goes something like, in today's episode of Software Sucks.
I'm sorry your software is shit, and I'm sorry mine is too.
Today? Or, I mean, I could catalog it by the minute, almost.
Yeah, but I usually do once per day, maybe a couple. Yeah, well.
You pick one out of the billions of minutes.
So I use this app called Relive, which takes your workouts from GPS, like, you know, on your Apple Watch or your Garmin device or from Strava, and turns it into a little animated video. So it takes your route and it animates you, like, you know, so it looks like this little dot that reruns your long tracks. And I think it's kind of cool. It's kind of fun to relive my runs. In the last few weeks, I've noticed that it estimates, well, it's been doing this. It will tell you like my average speed. And I don't know where it comes up with these numbers. It is just making shit up when it comes to calculating my average speed. Because in the end, it'll say you ran at this pace, this many mile, you know, minutes per mile. And it just told me today that I ran 8 miles per hour. I ran a total of 6.2 miles in about an hour and 20 minutes. That is not 8 miles per hour.
No.
So where are they getting that number from, I wonder? I mean, this is not hard, right? On the scale of 1 to quantum physics, this is way closer to 1 than, you know, I'm like, I don't get it. I don't get where these numbers come from, but I don't know. Oh, maybe that's, you know what? Oh, maybe that's supposed to be my top speed. So at one point I did 8 miles per hour. Okay. You know what? I guess I have to retract. I think they're doing better than I thought.
But is that really what you want to know? Like, that would be something you would maybe want to see if you chose to, but wouldn't you want the average pace as the default?
Well, they do show that. They do show that. It's just confusing. At the end, it popped up 8 miles per hour, but then I just noticed that it was next to the little rocket ship icon, so that's not the average. So yeah, I take that back. Software doesn't suck today, right? Well,
no, it does, because here's one thing that I don't like about Relive. I like, or Relive, see, I keep calling it Relive, which scared me when I first saw that. I was like, I don't want Peter to relieve himself while he's running.
Powder's out on, he's out in the mountains, in the woods, and had to relieve himself. Perfect.
I mean,
thank
I
you.
Know you did on your 50K run. There's nothing you could do about it, but still. Anyway, the thing that bothers me about Relive is that if I'm on my iPhone and you send me a link to the video, it's great. And I tap it and I start watching it. And just as it starts to get interesting, when the little chart starts going across, it pops up a thing saying, get the app. Hey, wouldn't you really love the app? And it just always annoys me. And I always miss part of the thing because it's telling me to get the app. And I'm like, fuck, I don't want the app. This guy sent me a link. You're playing the link. Can we just stick with that?
And I had no idea that would happen because I actually pay for the app. So at least they're smart enough not to try to get me to pay for the app until it renews again.
That is true. And that's actually something that a lot of people have never figured out. So bonus to them for that. Yeah. But
so you know what? I take that back. This is a reverse software sucks. That's great.
Yeah. They make Scott's life hell. This software's great. Two thumbs up, Peter Nicolaitis.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. Actually, anybody who's into running and you like to share your runs with people, this probably works for biking and all kinds of stuff, but this is a neat app. It creates a little chart. It shows you milestones. You can even stop and take pictures along the way, like Peter does sometimes, and then it'll stop and it'll show you the picture that he took, and that it's really cool. So like for some of your longer runs or your runs in locations that you haven't been to before, mm-hmm. It's really neat to be able to see not only what the run was like for you, elevation, pace, all these different things, shows you on the map where you're going, the whole GPS thing, but then it also shows you your waypoints where you stopped and took a picture. And that's really cool. I like it.
It also lets you, like, because you asked, for instance, when I did my 50 miler, which, you know, as I love to point out, it was actually 52.4 miles. You were like, wait, was this on trails or something? Or, you know, you could actually see when you look at Relive, it shows like you see trees and green backgrounds and stuff. So it like shows, hey, this was a trail run, right?
It does.
Okay. So back to Software Sucks, because I need to vindicate myself. So I need to now give two examples of software sucking. And these, in my opinion, and I know I have them, it doesn't invalidate them. In my opinion, these are no-brainers, and I don't understand why arguably two of the most popular fitness apps, those being Garmin Connect and Strava, right? Now, I know to you, Garmin Connect is what? I don't understand. That means nothing to me. But if you own a Garmin, this is what you use, right?
Yeah, but I don't forget, when I had my road bike, I had a Garmin bike computer, and I did these things. So.
Okay. But these days, it means nothing to you. But anyway, I take that back. So Garmin used to mean something to you.
Yes. Garmin used to mean something to me. A memoir by Scott Wilsey.
Garmin and Strava let you track your gear, whether it's a bike. Like Strava, I think, will do bikes and shoes. Garmin does bikes and shoes, and I think maybe like golf clubs or something. The idea being you track like when your bike might need maintenance or when you need to throw away your pair of shoes because, you know, you've exceeded the manufacturer's mileage recommend. Neither of these platforms allows you to start with previously logged miles on your shoes. Now, I know this is a completely foreign concept to anyone who works at Strava or Garmin, but it's possible that I have run in running shoes before I was a Garmin user or before I was a Strava user. Because they say, oh, well, the fix is just go back in your running history when you didn't log the workout with those shoes and add them. You add the shoes, then you go back to the old workout that you did and you just say, oh, I ran in these shoes. And I said, no, the workout is not in Strava. It's not in Garmin. It was like years. I've had one pair of shoes for like 7 years.
Wow.
Right. And yeah, I haven't been using them for 7 years. I use them like very infrequently on and off. The pair that I ran in today, my Ultra Lone Peak weather, all weather mids, I bought them last Thanksgiving in 2024. Uh-huh. As of today, I've put in like 62 miles on them total because I only use them in wet, snowy weather.
On Thanksgiving.
Which is not a lot. Well, yes. So that's not very often, right? I mean, sometimes it is, but it's also, wet, snowy weather, usually on trails. Often when it's wet and snowy, I'm not out on the trails, right? You know, I wimp out and I just stay on pavement. So as a result, these don't have a lot of mileage on them, but I've had these shoes for about 6 months longer than I have been using Garmin's. Tell me, what is the technical limitation? Why would you not allow you, when you're adding a pair of shoes, to say, what is the previous mileage? They ask you, like, what was the first date you used them? Mm-hmm. But they don't let you preload or even estimate the mileage that you have first. Like, why not? It's annoying. So I submitted that idea to Garmin today. So it'd be really awesome if they said, hey, that's really great. And that showed up in a future release.
I got to say, and I feel like Strava's worse at this than Garmin, but clearly Garmin's got issues at it too. There's something about those guys, and I'm not going to lie, about the people that were using it, where if it's not logged in Strava, it didn't happen and no meaning whatsoever. And I looked at some of the insufferable people and I was like, I just want to ride a bike. That's it. I don't want these people in my life. And I feel like that whole attitude comes from Strava itself sometimes. And this is an example of what you're talking about. Why would Peter have even begun running before Strava was created? Who did that?
I know. I mean, clearly.
Who did that? Nobody. Nobody, that's who.
So that's my daily software sucks. Yeah, I don't understand. It just doesn't make any sense. When you go to add the gear, it's one more little field, and then you just say, oh yeah, it had this. Anyway, it's dumb. It's dumb. So you had suggested we cover my issues trying to access my Mac Mini from remote locations.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Did you try that method and did it work for you? So here's what was happening. Here's what has happened to both of us, where if we don't access our Mac Mini for a long time, it seems to go completely offline. You try to insert your VNC and or screen sharing method here to it, and you get no response. And then you're like, great, I have to reboot this stupid thing. What I found was that if I just go into terminal and SSH to the thing, it tells me it's locked. In order to unlock it to be able to access it, you have to type in your password. So then you type in your password and it's like, great, SSH will work now. But not only does SSH work, but also whatever screen sharing method / VNC / Apple thingy you're using now works too. And you can actually get to your computer and use it. So did you try it and did it work for you?
I have not tried it because I haven't had to because it's been working.
Okay. Open your screen share of choice and try to go to your Mac that's in Vermont right now. And let's see what happens.
I am attempting that right now.
Beautiful. Unfortunately, it's probably going to work.
Yeah. Well, it's a thing. Okay. So I just connected to one of my Mac Minis. I can't tell the difference though, because I don't have them named properly. So I have to double check and see where I am at.
You don't have the name properly. Peter, you're not, I know that you're not one of those guys who builds a Windows server and leaves it win-428 dingo whatever. I know people who do. You are not one of them. So I'm surprised that you didn't name your Mac Minis.
I'm pretty sure I just Mac, well, I have them named. I do have them named properly, but since I had to connect to them via IP address and Tailscale, right now they show up in as IP addresses. So,
oh, I see. And you don't have all the IP addresses of all your devices memorized.
Right. So I need to rename them in, And meanwhile, whatever Mac Mini I'm on, it's telling me, hey, Notion has an update ready to install. Do you want to install it? And then I give my password. And then it says, hey, Notion has an update ready to install. Do you want to install it? And then I give it my password. And then it says a third time, hey, Notion has an update. And the third time it finally freaking worked. So I think I'm connected to my Massachusetts Mac Mini. I'm going to call this one Mac Mini Ma. And now I'm going to try to connect to Mac Mini 2, which I believe is in Mac Mini Vit. Let's find out. Connecting to IP address. And it says it's connecting, but I don't think it really is.
Peter, did you log your Notion update in Strava?
I didn't. Therefore, the update did not happen.
Right. That's why it keeps asking you to update it. It's like, come on, dude.
Must have been. So I believe this is going to time out because it's been sitting around thinking for some time and not doing anything.
So now you need to SSH to that Mac.
Yeah, I've got the IP address queued up in my warp terminal here.
I think you meant Quay.
I need to go back and listen to the last episode we recorded and go back again and listen to what your complaints with warp were that led you to go to Ghosty. I have downloaded and installed Ghosty, but I haven't gotten like into really using it. Connection failed to my Mac Mini. I am now going to SSH to it or attempt to do so.
Now, I will admit, I haven't done the SSH over Tailscale when this happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Kind of the only option I have. Well, I could SSH into my other machine in Vermont and then SSH from it to the Mac Mini, but then I have to...
You might have to try that. If your SSH from through your Tailscale hasn't connected yet, I don't think it's going to. No. Okay, then SSH to your other machine in Vermont, your dishwasher or whatever it is you're going through.
Oddly, funny that you mentioned my dishwasher. Let's take that aside right now, because as it happens, Okay, so I'm trying to SSH to my other... Oh, wait, no, sorry, I just SSH... I went to my wrong Linux box. I went to the one in my basement here in Massachusetts and not the one in in Vermont. Please hold.
You really have to name these by geographic location.
Well, I clicked the wrong host name. It wasn't. This was a host name thing. Peter issue. All right. I am now. What the hell? I am connected to a Linux box, but it came up with channel 18, open, failed, connect, failed, open, failed, channel 20, same, channel 21, 23, 24, open, failed, connect, failed, open, failed, and I'm on my machine.
What are these channels?
I have no idea, but it's a Debian warning error message that just popped up on my screen. I have no idea why.
I bet it's related to a Notion update that you haven't done.
Probably, because, yeah, exactly. All right, so now next thing I need to do is nmap my local network, because I have no idea where I am.
Oh, you should also make a static reservation for this Mac Mini so that you always know its IP address on that network.
I thought I had done that. Actually, yeah, I could, you know what, I could just cheat and look in my Eero.
Yep.
And see what's going on.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you've ever wanted to be on Peter's Vermont network from Massachusetts, this is your chance.
It's now or never. All right, so 24 devices online and Echo Dots. There's my Bosch dishwasher, which we'll get back to. Oh, there's my Mac Mini VT. I found its IP address.
Ah, okay. So shh into it.
I'm going to shh, which is not to be confused with shush.
No. Because if it was the same, all of a sudden you would go very silent.
I am failing to shh into it.
Okay. Interesting.
And I did not change the default shh port on this box. So I have a feeling this one, and it claims to be online. In my Eero says this device is online.
Oh, you know what?
And it does have a reservation. So I did give it a static IP in my Eero. I just forgot about it.
Okay, that's fine. But there might be a setting in system settings that you need to check.
You mean
hold on here.
The next time I go to Vermont?
Because,
yeah.
So I think I did two things. One is that my Mac Mini Energy, I think it's possible. I have it. So you probably have Wake for network access enabled on it, but check that just in case.
So.
I also have prevent automatic sleeping when the display is off, and I realize that's not the optimum way to do things.
It's not the optimum way to save power.
Right. It may be the optimum way to access your Mac Mini, though. You might want to give that a try.
Bingo.
Oh, and also make sure that startup automatically after a power failure is enabled,
yes.
Peter, because for some reason it was not enabled by default on mine.
Yep.
Although that's clearly not your problem if it's online.
So, this is not happening.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry that doesn't work for you because your problem statement sounded a lot like what was happening to me, and I can solve it because for some reason it locks something. I don't know what it's doing, but anyway, it doesn't allow connections to it until I SSH to it, type the password, and then it unlocks it, and then I have to type the password again, but it doesn't matter. I can get to it. So anyway, okay, interesting.
We tried. We failed.
Well, this saga will continue, listeners. I know that you can't wait to hear the resolution, so one day that will happen.
Indeed.
Okay.
But not today.
What else do we have? What else?
Well, so back to my dishwasher.
Oh, yeah.
So in Vermont, as we've covered on this podcast, and I'm sure I've covered on the Blurring the Lines podcast many times, I have had recurring problems with hot water. Does this ring any sort of bells?
Yes, it rings a bell. It does ring a bell. I remember a recent conversation with you talking about pressures are low.
My past visit, not this most recent, but the time before, I had issues not just with hot water, but with all water. And the water pressure was super low, horrifically low. It was terrible. And I called my handyman / groundskeeper / carpenter / general contractor. And he came up and changed the water filter. Now, here's the thing. He changed the water filter when I was there in September also. And it worked for a while. and then it didn't. Now, I have not been there. I had not been there for 2 months.
Okay.
And all of a sudden, the water is not working again. So now, the current theory is that when the water isn't moving frequently enough, it's starting to jam up in the pipes, in the filter. And the issue, because the only thing that's changed since when my dad lived there was the water is not being used regularly.
Yep.
Whereas when he did there, live there, it was being used every day. I remembered that I have two smart appliances at home, one being the shower and one being the dishwasher. I never got around to connecting the shower to Wi-Fi. I tried one time, I hit a brick wall, and I was like, I don't need this. The shower does not need to be Wi-Fi enabled.
No, it does not. There's too many scenarios I can think of right off the top of my head.
But I did set up my Bosch smart dishwasher with Wi-Fi. So now, every day or two, I just do a 60-minute wash and rinse cycle. And we'll see. Maybe that will fix the problem.
But does it have to be? I mean, I guess it does. I wish there was a way that you could not run 60 minutes of water through that thing.
I mean, the washer doesn't run 60 minutes of water. It fills up, it runs for a while, and it drains, and then it fills, you know, it fills up for a wash and it fills up for a rinse. It doesn't run for an hour.
Is there any way to just skip all that and just do the fill up for a rinse thing? There has to be.
The fastest cycle I could find on it was 60 minutes. So, I mean, I could just run it and stop it. I could interrupt it.
Yeah.
But I didn't find like just a rinse job on it or something. If I did. Now, the other option would be to run the shower for a little while, but that one is more dangerous because I'd have to actually remember to stop the water.
It's almost like it's not completely enclosed and continuous running of water could be bad.
Yeah. Well, the other part, though, is like, what if I start a job and I lose my internet connection? Because internet never goes out in Vermont, right? And then the next thing you know, the shower's running for a week. Probably not the best idea. So, but it turns out, you know, and also I think my Samsung washer and dryer probably are also Wi-Fi capable, so I could tell it to just do a load of laundry. So yeah, that's what I can do. I've got that, and I've, you know, been doing that for the last few days. We'll see. I did also tell him, though, you know what, that pressure tank that I have, it's ancient. It's probably full of silt and, you know, sand and stuff anyway, but I think it's at least 20, if not 30 or more years old. So I was like, let's go ahead and plan to replace that anyway while you're at
it. That's actually a good point. You may find that, like, if you just put one of those flat heaters, the ones that don't use a tank, tankless, if you, mm-hmm. you may find that if you just put one of those on there, your problem completely goes away.
Well, it's not the heater. The heater is a tankless heater. This is just all water. So this is just the pressure tank, because I have a well. So, yeah, you know, okay. The well water comes out. And it's something to
that
pump
does it. Require a tank. You can't have a tankless tank.
Yeah. Yep. So there you go. Yeah. I mean, it's got a speed 60. Oh, it has a rinse. Look at that. Use this if you just want to. 12 minutes, 1 gallon of water. Perfect.
There you go. That's what you want. I knew there had to be a way, because even my stupid, dumb Wi-Fi list dishwasher has that.
Yep. Start time. Now, what I can't do, I don't have a way to like run this every day. And I understand that. You don't necessarily expect, you know, you run your washer, yeah, because there's generally some human interaction. But anyway, that's a 12-minute.
Sometimes, like putting some dishes in first.
Yeah, exactly. Or taking them out, right?
Or taking the ones out, yeah.
So, yeah, so it's set to run at 8 a.m. to do a rinse job.
That's we'll good. That. Okay. Because yep. I was going to suggest there has to be something like that you could put on your sink or something. There has to be a way to do this without running it. Yeah. But that's pretty good. That's a pretty good compromise.
Yeah. It says 12 minutes, 1 gallon. So I figured flushing a gallon of water a day, that's not terrible. Plus, you know, the thing is, I'm not on municipal water, right? So the water runs through the system and it goes right out into the septic tank. So essentially it's, you know, comes in one side of the house, right out the other. So I don't feel like I'm, you know, destroying the environment all that much. I hope not.
Peter, all you have to do is open an LLM window and type how, and then you've already used at least a gallon, maybe several hundred gallons. I don't even know. So yeah, I think.
Fair enough.
Actually, that's what you should do. You should hook an LLM up to your house. You'll never stop running water.
Oh, man. Perfect. All right. So we talked about Mac Minis in remote locations.
Yeah, which apparently I didn't help you with, and I apologize.
No, I mean, it made sense, but yeah, it didn't. Well, I don't have the formal review, but I will say that I am now rocking a Garmin Forerunner 965. You may remember a couple months ago.
I do.
I wrote about the Garmin Forerunner 955. And you may say again, now, why did you buy an old model? Because the newest one is the 970.
Peter, why did you buy an old model?
Yeah, well, no, I did buy an old model.
Old watch club.
So I ended up selling my Garmin Forerunner 955 for $375.
To a satisfied customer?
Satisfied? I haven't heard. He's got my email and my phone, and I haven't heard any complaints. I paid $399. So given that I got about 6 months of use out of it, I'm pretty satisfied with that trade-in value. This one I purchased for $449, so $50 more. So for a net $75, I upgraded to newer technology, but more importantly, a bigger, brighter AMOLED display.
Now, I'm starting to sound like Bill Cosby. I noticed how loose that watch is on your wrist. Are you using the heart rate monitor on that at all?
At the moment, yes.
Okay.
So it's not that loose. This is only one notch looser than I would for running, but I use the Polar heart rate monitor that you recommended.
Maybe it's because that wrist strap that you have on there is really stiff, so any movement makes the head of the actual watch itself bop around quite a bit.
Yeah, it is. I am using the stock strap. I did order a nylon replacement, which is similar to the Apple Trail Loop for the Ultra. That's supposed to show up in a couple of days, so we'll see how that works. I had other ones from the 955 that theoretically would work, but they're all black and gray, and I thought that a black or a gray strap with a white watch might look a little weird, so we'll see how that goes. So, yeah, essentially, the biggest change is I have, you know, a bigger, brighter screen, right? Functionally, that's really it. None of the other advances or changes or anything have really changed, you know, taken place. The watch faces look slightly different than, you know, the ones that I think there are a couple of different options for here. But other than that, this is pretty much just, you know, it's the same. So it's kind of like going from an Apple Watch Series 9 to a 10. You know, it's not like getting a brand new watch. It's just a maybe faster, maybe brighter display.
So which model is this one again?
The Forerunner 965.
Okay. Now, there's one other review that you promised me at one point that you didn't give me. And I actually ordered this product based on the fact that you had bought it, but I didn't know whether your review was positive or negative yet. And this is a portable coffee grinder that you bought. And my wife is going to South Korea, and I know that she's going to drink some pre-brewed, tons of pre-brewed coffee while she's there, but she also might want to buy some beans and try to grind those. I bought her that exact grinder, and I can tell by the look on your face that maybe that was a bad idea. I was hoping that your review was going to be good.
In my defense, I did not tell you to buy this thing.
No, you did not. I
even told you outright that I haven't used it yet, and that remains true.
Oh.
I have still not even unboxed this thing.
Okay, then that's fine. I have no issues with that. Actually, maybe she should give you a review. Maybe I should get her up here.
Maybe she should. No, I took it with me to Mexico, and because I was so happy with all of the coffee shops and everything that was around, I never ended up using it down there in Mexico. And I did not bother bringing it to Turks and Caicos because I asked my AI assistant, and it's like, Turks and Caicos isn't really known for its coffee scene. Probably better off sparing the space in your luggage and don't bother. So I didn't bother.
Now, the one thing I did notice is that it did take her a lot of effort to get 16 grams of beans ground. Like, it took a little while.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely not something where you do a couple cranks and suddenly you've got your coffee beans ground. It took a little while. Now, what I'm not sure of, though, is with those little portable ones, is it better just to pour it in a little bit at a time? Or she dumped in the whole 16 grams at once, which seemed like... Now, the neat thing about this is that it has a little glass insert, and the little glass cup is what the grinds actually go into, which is pretty cool. So you've got a nice little easily collectible thing that's made out of glass, so it should reduce the static electricity somewhat compared to plastic. And yeah, so from that aspect, it looks pretty neat. And it does have a long handle, so it was easier to grind than her previous little hand grinder that she was using. It looks a little clunky because you're kind of doing this. Peter can see me. Your arms are doing like circles around each other. But it gives you more leverage. So I think from that aspect, it grinds pretty well.
Okay.
So I sent her a question. I said, do you have a mini review of the grinder? Okay, worth using, And I see typing.
Typing is good.
She says it is easy to use, but she hasn't tried adjusting the grind yet. So
maybe it's impossible to adjust the grind.
No, it's not impossible. It has a little ring. It's not impossible.
How do you know? Has she actually turned the ring?
Yeah, I saw her turning it, and then she set it to what she thought she should use, and then...
Okay. I remain unconvinced. Peter wonders if you can actually turn the ring.
It's not Thor's hammer, Peter. It's a coffee grinder. I'm pretty sure she can turn the ring.
You are not worthy! Oh, man. So, cool. I've got a couple of other nifties, but I will save them for a future podcast, I think.
Oh, did we talk about, though, we started to in the very beginning, what did you get for Christmas?
What did I get for Christmas? Let's see. This is great. The first Christmas gift I got was a little bottle of Irish cream from Cork, Ireland. Not Bailey's, but similar. The second present I got within that hour was a bottle of Knob Creek whiskey. Can you see where this is going?
Oh, wow.
I also got a 2-hour massage.
While you were drinking the whiskey?
No.
Wait, what was the whiskey type again?
Knob Creek. I think it was the 9-year-old barrel-aged 9-year-old one, if I recall, but I don't remember. I'm not a huge whiskey guy. If you wanted to ask John Chidgey, I'm sure he'd be able to tell you all about it.
Mm-hmm.
I got a bottle of Veuve Clicquot champagne, which is just as pretentious as it sounds.
Is it?
It's fancy, C-L-I? Expensive champagne. I'll send you a picture. It's French, and I'm sure that any French people are probably bristling at my pronunciation.
Peter, they're going to bristle no matter what you do.
Yeah, well, Haitians as well, they do that. So I got champagne.
Mm-hmm.
I got a bottle of gin.
What kind of gin was it?
I don't remember. I have to go downstairs. I don't remember.
I knew before I drank it. Afterwards, I don't remember. I couldn't tell you.
It was gin. I have never been a big gin guy, but maybe I will be now. I don't know. I got a grab bag. My running buddy gave me a packet of Lego Marvel superhero packets with a random Lego character. The last time he did this, about a year ago, or for my 2 years ago for my birthday, he gave me a Lego Batman. And that started something. You can't see it, but on my display, on the top of my screen, there's Lego Batman and Superman. And they are flanked by the Joker, Lex Luthor, Robin, Shazam, and Harley Quinn. So now I might have to do this whole thing over with Spider-Man and company. So we'll see.
Are you sure that your buddy Greg isn't the reindeer Greg?
I am not. And I sent him a message. Now, here's an interesting thing. We were having coffee yesterday at Prep Hero. Stand by, dear listener, for a mm-hmm. future review.
And you sent me a beautiful review, which we will have to play at some point.
Yes. So I mentioned to him, I said, Scott's probably going to say, what do I do with this video? I can't use video, et cetera, et cetera. And I'll have to remind him he can just extract the audio and put it on our podcast. And Greg tells me...
I didn't say any of those things.
Greg tells me, yeah, but you know, you don't always give context to things. And I said, yeah, but the context is in the video, because like the very first thing I say right off the bat in this video is, hey, friends with Brews listener, this is Peter, and I'm coming to you from this coffee shop drinking coffee. Like, that's your context.
You
right?
did do a good job of setting it up. I could do it with just audio and it would be perfectly fine.
So as soon as you play that, you'll know. And Greg says, yeah, but I don't play videos that I get when you send them. And I was just like, huh. Now, my initial reaction is judgy and like, wait, what are you, what is wrong with you? You know, but I, you know, I have to understand different people use technology and just approach things differently. So now I know Greg doesn't, you know, do things, but I, the snarky part of me when I was thinking about this later, and if he listens to this, he's going to hate me and stuff, but I wanted to ask him like, so when you get a letter in the mail, do you look at the return address and write back to the person who sent it and say, hey, what's this about? Because if you don't click on the video, it's like, well, I don't open this without knowing what it is. Like, well, yeah, but you know, if you get a box in the mail or package or something, you don't know what it is. What do you do there? Right. So that was my interesting. So
that is interesting. Now, I will say, just because he doesn't like to receive one type of information format doesn't mean he doesn't like when you send me the voice messages. The reason I almost never listen to them is Apple makes them so inconvenient. They're hard to listen yes. to on the go. They're just a yep. major pain in the ass. And so what I do is I wait for the transcript, and usually the transcript is hilarious but close enough that I understand what you were saying.
Yep, exactly.
And so, and then once in a while I do listen to them if I'm actually not doing something and I have both my hands and my phone screen can remain unlocked that entire time, then I'll listen to them. But yep. videos that people send you obviously don't have that. So that is kind of interesting, because I may have to wait a while, but I do play the videos that you send me.
Right. And, you know, but some people don't, right? I know like a friend of mine once said, like, you know, I'm trying to not to make a habit out of clicking random links that people send me via messages.
Which
like,
is all right. good.
Exactly. But these are videos. They're
and I can tell
right?
from the screenshot of the video, this is Peter Nicolaitis filming himself. Presumably he knew he was doing it, and presumably he knew that it was sent to me.
Well, we don't know that for sure.
We don't, actually.
So anyway, but no, it did, you know, like I said, I did have to appreciate that. Okay, different people have different use cases, right? So
yes.
I understand
yeah, yeah, yeah,
that.
Yeah.
Anyway, I will say, I want to, I'm so happy about this website. I want to give a nifty, here's a website that works really well, and it is called gpx.studio. It is a free app. They ask you very unobtrusively to, you know, maybe donate if you get value out of it. But what I was able to do today is download my run from my Garmin, or say from Strava, anything that will export a GPX thing, and save the trail. Now, I ran from my car to the trailhead, then did a lasso, and then stopped. I want to save the trail without that run from the car. GPX Studio, I'm able to drag my cursor right to the start, the spot where I started, and crop out the rest of it and export a full trail map of just the trail. This is really cool. The other thing I was able to do for my 50 miler, which turned out to be 52.4 miles, I was able to take one lap of the 12.5 mile loop and copy and paste it in three more times to make a 50 mile trail out of it.
Oh.
And so you can do all kinds of cool things with, you know, with this website. So I, for instance, exported my workout from Garmin just now, and imported it, and then I re-exported it without my cadence, without my time, and without my steps. So all I really have now is just a map. And now I can give this to anyone else who wants to say, I want to run the Middlesex Fells Trail. And I'm like, well, here you go. Here's your map, without any of the other, you know, personal data. So gpx.studio, way cool.
That is cool, yeah. That is really cool.
I am going to give them a one-time tip, because they were It's a really cool website.
I'm going to give them one type tip too. If you own a house in Vermont, you're going to want to run your dishwasher on rinse for at least a gallon of water per day. Okay.
Yep.
I feel better.
Yes, you are.
I feel like I'm supporting them.
Yeah.
No, that is a really cool. That is a very cool utility. You can tell that. I like it. See, this is the kind of thing when people actually, instead of creating yet another social network, instead of doing something, like, they actually have a problem that they're like, "This is annoying. I'm going to fix this," and then they just fix it.
Yep, it's pretty slick. It's pretty slick, and it's, you know, it's a simple little thing. You can do all kinds of cool stuff to GPX files. I mean, that's all I've done so far, right? But it's got, you know, you can change units, you can add distance markers. It, you know, it has a 3D view. If you just want to look at your GPS files, you know, your exports, you can use it to like fly in and expand and zoom into the maps and stuff. It's got some really cool things. The other thing too, I use an app called Footpath. I don't know if we've talked about this on the podcast before, but I believe it's footpath.app.
Footpath.com.
That's what it is. Yes, exactly. I do pay for that occasionally. And, you know, the free version, it's perfectly functional. The paid version essentially just lets you store more maps and stuff, which is kind of cool. I use it, but I should be able, I think I could import. I don't remember if Footpath lets you import or not. But what it does let you do is draw and map out your own routes. So if you don't have a GPX file, but you have an idea of the trail you want to run, you can map out your own either on your smartphone or in a web browser, and then you can export that as a GPX file and use it for navigation. The app itself, Footpath, also has navigation built in. And I have never had what I would call great luck with it. I've had okay luck with it at best.
Peter, I would like to read a short story to you from the Footpath User Guide, Import and Export, Importing GPX Files. There are two ways to import a GPX file. Download the GPX file to your device, locate the file, and do open in. Or open Footpath, tap the menu in the upper left corner of the map, open the settings, select import GPX file. So you can import GPX files into Footpath.
I think you have to be settings. It looks like you have to be using the app for that because it doesn't seem to have that option on the web interface. So if I was to try on the app, let's see. You're probably right there. Let's go to Footpath. Let's go up to blah, blah, blah. Go to settings. Go to import GPX file right there.
Beautiful. Yep.
That's it. Cool. All right. Well, we've done a lot today, Scott. I think we should end on a high note.
We've done a lot with GPX and otherwise. Lots of alcohol for Christmas. Lots of GPX for general purpose.
Two nifties too, huh?
Peter, if people on the...
Oh, right, the goddamn internet.
...wanted to find us, how would people find us? And did they find us? And will they find us? And can they find us? And what should they do when they find us?
They can and will and have found us on friendswithbrews.com. And when I dictated that to my iPhone earlier, it wanted to send me to friendswithbruises.com. And as dumb as it is, I am really tempted to buy that again because sometimes it feels like after all the work that we've done to get the audio and do all the recording and stuff, I feel bruised.
I know. We have bruises. Yeah, yeah. It is painful.
So, friends with bruised bruises. But I'll also add a link to the show notes so we can have the Middlesex Fells Reservoir Trail. If anybody wants to download it. And to your point about the watch being loose, it looks like it got unlocked from my wrist at some point. So I did, maybe it was a little bit loose. So I just tightened it.
By the way, speaking of show notes, I did find a way. So now I've updated the I've updated the description for the episode. I've added a field for the description for episodes in the Friends with Brews website such that, and this isn't something that people see, but what it does mean is that when the RSS is generated, now the full set of show notes shows up in things like Overcast, whereas before it was just the short description blurb that was showing up. So now if you're in Overcast, scroll down underneath the chapters and you'll get all the show notes, including all the links. And it just started with the last episode, so I haven't gone back and retroactively fixed all the other episodes to do that yet. I may or may not have Claude whip me up a script to just go do it. Just effing do it.
Just effing do it. Yeah, I mean, if you enjoy doing it, I don't know if there's... Don't do it for me. If you feel like you've got anything else that, you know, that takes priority, I would say work on that instead, you know?
Well, yeah, but this is an easy thing to do. All I have to do is say, just go do that, to do what I did on the last episode to all the others, and it's easy enough to do. Because the show notes are literally right in the episode itself. All it has to do is take them, make a new front matter thing, and paste them in up there, and then they show up in the RSS feed from then on out. So,
got it. Cool.
So, well, go ahead.
I was about to cut you off.
Go ahead. Cut me off.
I think we should cut off. I think on that note, we really should just stop and push the big red button.
Tell your friends.
I thought I just did.